The time is now 1:10. We will begin the session. Is prostitution the next marijuana, the path to decriminalizing sex work? Elizabeth Nolan Brown, Caitlin Bailey, and Ariola Moskowitz are our speakers. Please silence your cell phone and address all questions into the mic during the Q&A.
Thank you. Hi, everyone. Welcome. My name is Ariella Moskowitz. I'm Communications Director at Decriminalized Sex Work. We are a national organization pursuing a state-by-state strategy to do exactly what our name suggests, which is to decriminalize the consensual adult, sex work. The term sex work encompasses lots of forms of erotic labor, many of which are legal. So when we talk about this, we're talking mostly about prostitution, and again, consensual adult prostitution. So let me first give a little bit more of an introduction of Caitlin and Elizabeth Nolan Brown. I hope you've taken some time to read their bios. They're both really, really impressive, but maybe I'll tell you a couple things you can't read on the website. So Caitlin now is the executive director and founder of Old Pro Productions. She was actually one of the founders of Decriminalized Sex Work in 2018. So when I became our communications director last fall, I'm still trying to fill the really big shoes that she left behind. And she's doing a lot of incredible work to decriminalize sex work in a different way by telling really important stories and working to change the narrative. Elizabeth Nolan Brown is someone that those of us who are doing this turn to kind of make sense of all the different influences and factors that go into this country's war on sex and tech and crime. So sometimes when we're trying to figure it out and we see Elizabeth has tweeted an article, we're like, yes, she nailed it. She nailed it. That makes it all make sense. So a bunch of you actually look fairly familiar from having stopped by our booth over the past couple days. So I'll just take a brief moment to talk about the four models of governing prostitution around the world, the four legal frameworks, and then I will turn it over to these two incredible humans. So we are pushing for the full decriminalization of consensual adult sex work. That's the removal of any penalty, civil or criminal, for engaging as an adult in sex work. I can only say those words so many times. So libertarians are natural allies because two adults doing something that they both have agreed to isn't something necessarily that the government should be involved in. And the data and evidence around the decriminalization of sex work where it's happened, such as in New Zealand, show that where sex work is decriminalized, public health and safety increase dramatically, and exploitation in the commercial sex industry goes way down. So people who are concerned about trafficking, as we all should be, it's a horrible human rights abuse. It happens in all labor sectors. But if this is something that really concerns you, this is one of the most, and maybe the only way to really, really fight it. And there are a number of reasons for that. The next legal framework that a lot of people might be familiar with is legalization. That's the model adopted in Amsterdam and in the US in a couple rural counties in Nevada. So legalization is different than decriminalization because legalization, you know, when we hear, okay, it's not illegal, it should be legal, but legalization would actually impose a set of rules and regulations on the sex industry. And the two are not mutually exclusive, but where legalization has been implemented, we have not seen any of the benefits that we do see with full decriminalization. Please stop by later and I will tell you those exact reasons why, but I don't want to take any more time right now. The third model, we have branded the entrapment model. It's what other folks may know as the Nordic model, Swedish model, and demand model. Lately, it's been rebranded by a group as the equality model, which makes it sound great. There's nothing equal about the equality model. And again, happy to explain more about that later. And then of course, criminalization, which is what we have all around the US now, which means buying and selling sex on both sides is illegal and you could go to jail for it, as you all probably know. So I'm gonna let Elizabeth start us off with some of the things that those of us who have been working in this field for a little while take for granted that others may not know. We run a lot into the conflation of human trafficking and consensual adult sex work, which is a really dangerous thing both for folks who are being trafficked and consensual adult sex workers. So Elizabeth, maybe you can start us off there, and then we'll go from there. And then Caitlin will chat for a while.
Yeah, so should I pick this up?
Do you want to just take,
Yeah, so as Ariella sort of covered, I mean, sex work is an umbrella term that encompasses a lot of different things, from prostitution to stripping to webcam porn, all sorts of things. But when we're talking about it here in this context today, I think we're mostly talking about the exchange of sex acts for money, so prostitution. A lot of people conflate that with sex trafficking, as Ariella mentioned. I started writing about this issue at Reason Magazine when I started there back in 2014. I wanted to just write about sex worker rights from a sort of pretty standard libertarian, like, yay, people should be able to decide what they do with their own bodies perspective. And pretty soon just, you know, ran into the fact that you couldn't talk or write about sex work and sex worker rights then and now without people being like, but what about sex trafficking? So sex trafficking, you know, refers to where there is a situation involving force, fraud, or coercion and or minors. Under federal law, that's the definition. There has to be force, fraud, or coercion involving an adult. Or if someone under 18 is involved, there does not necessarily have to be forced crime or coercion involved. Anyone under 18 who is involved in sex work is de facto defined as a sex trafficking victim. When people are talking about decriminalization and legalization, they are not talking about minors being able to be involved. They're not talking about legalizing sex trafficking. They're talking about legalizing consensual sex work between adults. So the big difference between, you know, sex trafficking and sex work or in general is turns on consent. You know, there is consent involved in sex work when we talk about that. There is not consent involved in sex trafficking, and that is the big issue. It's been interesting, though, since I started covering this at Reason over the past 6 or 7 years to see how fully, and it was already on its way to doing this, but how fully the media and others in the public sphere have embraced the idea that all sex work, all prostitution is sex trafficking. It is every week that you see, and every day really, if you look at newspapers across the country, which I do because I have like a Google alert on all of these words, that you see headlines saying, you know, a sex trafficking bust, a human trafficking bust, and then it'll say, you know, police arrested 40 men or something in a human trafficking bust or whatever, police made 100 arrests in a sex trafficking bust, and it's like, wow, that's, you know, seems really bad. And inevitably, you look at, you know, 3-4 paragraphs down where it actually lists what the charges are, and it's all just charges for prostitution, either for selling sex or for buying sex. So media from ranging from local news to, you know, the biggest outlets in the country, national news, just routinely conflate sex work and sex trafficking and act like they are all one and the same. So that really kind of complicates the issue.
Yeah, I mean, just to sort of ping pong on that, I think that there was a really great high profile case of that, you know, when Robert Kraft, the owner of the Patriots, was caught up in what was sold to the media as a big human trafficking bust, an international trafficking ring, right? We got 5 different law enforcement agencies throwing themselves press conferences, you know, about the heroic act of spending months and months and months recording the world's most boring porn, you know, from various legally licensed massage parlors across South Florida. You know, and it's fascinating to me, you know, when we read about this, it's illegal sex acts because, you know, I think that we can all agree that nobody should be put in handcuffs for an aggressively consensual hand job. And I think what's important to recognize about that particular case is that the only unusual fact about it was that was somebody so high profile was involved. But actually, this is what anti or so-called anti-trafficking efforts look like across the country. You know, vice departments are using all of the tools that they perfected on the failed war on drugs to surveil, in this case, legally licensed masseurs, but, you know, adults that are exchanging erotic labor for money. And so, you know, I think we have to ask ourselves as a country, if we really care about trafficking victims, then it's really important to listen to what those victims need. And it's not more arrests. So as Ariella said, I worked for 2 years at Decriminalized Sex Work, talking to legislators all over the country about this issue, and you know, was very informed by the incredible work that Elizabeth does at Reason. But I realized that, you know, we're not going to get anywhere legislatively on this until we change the culture. And so what we do at Old Pearl Productions is we try to remind people that sex workers have always been a part of the story, and I think it's it helps take a little bit of the, you know, high stakes emotionality out of it when we're talking about people that were around 100 years ago. You know, we didn't criminalize prostitution in this country until the progressive era. We criminalized prostitution at the same time that we criminalized alcohol and also abortion. This was sold to the American public as a fight against what was called white slavery at the time, the Mann Act, which passed in 1910. And there are a lot of similarities between the conversation that we have about human trafficking and the, you know, sort of moral panic that has led to a lot of bad laws that don't serve victims or adult sex workers. And I think it's really important to remember that when we talk about cracking down on prostitution, we are also talking about cracking down on the freedom of movement and freedom of expression of women. You know, a lot, you know, I think Elizabeth can expand on this, but, you know, a lot of the so-called anti-trafficking laws are about empowering citizens or people that work at hotels to report suspicious behavior, like women traveling alone who wear acrylic nails. You know, like, there's a lot of sort of racist assumptions, a lot of sexism, and a lot of incredibly predictable and inevitable consequences to trying to criminalize the oldest profession.
I mean. Sure. Well, I guess I should have mentioned, too, that we will leave a little time at the end for Q&A. But maybe, Elizabeth, you can touch a little bit on the subject of our panel, which is prostitution, the next marijuana. And we know there are some similarities and a lot of differences. Mm-hmm. So maybe you can share your thoughts on that. And then, Caitlin, if you could do the same after Elizabeth shares with us.
I will mostly focus on the similarities. And they're not good similarities, though. They're not like similarities to the way what we're seeing with marijuana right now, which is a lot of positive things for the past, you know, 10 years or more. There is a lot of similarities between the war on sex right now and the way that the drug war played out throughout the 80s and 90s, especially. One of the major things is that this, you know, this war on sex trafficking, as they say, that's what they call it, even though it turns out being, you know, a war on sort of sex workers more broadly, it's used to justify all sorts of civil liberties encroachments and all sorts of new policing initiatives. Under the banner of fighting sex trafficking, the federal government funnels a ton of money to police departments around the country for what are just old-fashioned vice stings, where they just, you know, arrest people for either selling sex or soliciting sex. The federal government also gets involved in these vice stings. The Robert Kraft thing that Caitlin was talking about, Homeland Security was involved. I write a lot about these massage parlor stings, and Homeland Security is routinely involved in busting people giving hand jobs at massage parlors across the country. And, you know, there's no trafficking involved in these things. And it's like, why are our federal Homeland Security agents involved in someone, you know, paying for a hand job? But that is something they routinely do under the guise of fighting sex trafficking. So that's one thing that this, you know, fake war has let the federal government do is funnel all of this money and federal law enforcement resources to busting things that, you know, we don't even think obviously should be illegal in the first place. But if people do think they're illegal, I think they mostly think that they should be local crime matters and not something that we need our federal agents and our FBI and Homeland Security getting involved in. It's also generally just sort of used as a catch-all measure to crack down on civil liberties of all sorts. As Caitlin mentioned, on freedom of movement, on freedom of speech, You know, there are all these laws saying that people have to receive all of this training on how to spot trafficking victims, which, as she mentioned, is usually just based on really like racist and classist and sexist assumptions, where they give these really sort of stereotypical things like someone is dressed too shabbily, or a woman is sitting alone at a bar, or things like that. And they, or one of them, you know, some of the Homeland Security literature actually just says like something doesn't feel right. And what we've seen is, you know, as they've pushed this more and more, especially with like airlines and all over the place, they're making barbers and beauty shops do this training. Mm-hmm. They're trying to make it, you know, so that if people at motels don't do it, the motels could be in trouble. And what you see is just more reporting of sex work in general, so more sex workers getting arrested themselves, and B, a lot of times like interracial couples or multiracial families on airplanes, that's happened like so many times, where someone has been detained and because they have had someone report them as a sex trafficker for being with a girlfriend or a daughter who is of a different race than them, often Asian, because we have this narrative that all Asian women and children in this country are being sex trafficked, which is also, you know, a racist stereotype that drives a lot of the massage parlor panic that we see. And then, you know, as I said, freedom of speech is also under threat, because this is a big, and privacy in general, because this is a big way that they use as an excuse to pass all sorts of new laws. Some very high profile, like FOSTA, which was a 2018 law that made it illegal to host ads online that facilitate prostitution. And that law just, you know, and maybe Caitlin, I want to talk a little bit more about this, but that law really just led to a sort of general chilling of speech online related to sexuality, because now websites can face huge penalties if they allow anything that could be seen as, you know, facilitating or promoting prostitution. But also just more generally, we have a lot of federal agencies now devoted to policing all sorts of online spheres, and there's been a bunch of powers granted to them to do these various things under the guise of fighting sex trafficking. One of the craziest is that DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research, it's like a military research, the DOD research arm, and NASA were involved in building facial recognition tools almost exclusively by using sex worker ads that were publicly run on sites like Backpage and Craigslist. They also used ArmsList, which was a sort of Craigslist for gun sales. But they used mostly sex workers and some gun owners to build this facial recognition database and test their tools. So it's just all of these things are sort of being justified under the banner of fighting sex trafficking. And we've seen it ramp up and ramp up in the same predictable pattern that we saw with the war on drugs, where it's just, you know, pretty much anything can be justified, and this escalating pattern can be justified because it's like, you know, like they used to be say back in the day, like, what are you, you know, you want to support crack dealers? And now it's just like, what, you want to support sex traffickers? And so everybody in Congress or in state houses across the country is just like, nope, we don't want to do that. So they just vote for whatever sort of infringements on liberty come along to try and look like they're doing something and not, you know, face vulnerabilities, political vulnerabilities.
And thank you so much for bringing up Sesta Fosta, because I think it's a really good example of how this anti-trafficking rhetoric is used to justify actively harmful policies. You know, law enforcement agencies across the country agree that shutting down Backpage, shutting down Craigslist erotic services made it harder for them to identify and find victims of exploitation and violence. You know, Backpage has a long history of working with law enforcement to help find abusers and exploiters in this, but since that platform has been removed, and the, you know, when you conflate adult consensual prostitution, right, with the horrible crime of human trafficking, you justify a lot of horrific abuses of civil liberties, exactly what Elizabeth said. And, you know, I live in New York, and I can tell you that immediately after the passage of Sesta Fosta, there was a very nice restaurant on the Upper East Side that stopped serving single women at their bar because they didn't want victims of sex trafficking in their restaurant. You know, there are all kinds of places that identify women traveling alone as a red flag for sex trafficking. You know, I'm a stand-up comic. I've traveled all over the country. You know, I
I take a lot of Uber rides, and the last thing that I want is my Uber driver asking me a lot of intrusive questions with the power to report me to federal authorities for suspected, suspicion of trafficking myself, which is a real crime that you can actually be charged with. There are a lot of examples of this kind of conflation leading to bad laws and policies. I do want to address Ariella's question in the and the name. Yeah, exactly. The title of this presentation is, is prostitution the next marijuana? And I think it's really important to remember that sex workers are service providers and not commodities, right? You can't light us up and smoke us. You can't treat us or regulate us as though we were a packaged product because we are human beings. And so there's a lot of things that make sense when regulating a substance that don't make sense when you're talking about the freedom of movement, freedom of expression, and sexual agency of individual people. And when you crack down on adult consensual prostitution, you're actually infringing on the civil liberties of every single person, whether they engage in sex work or not. You are allowing various government agencies, police departments to ask questions about your sex life, with the real possibility that, if somebody doesn't like what you're doing, you can be charged with prostitution. We have a long history of policing promiscuity in this country, right? We have a long history of policing homosexuality. There are aggressively consensual BDSM acts that are still criminalized in this country. And one of the points that I want to make is that whether you've ever engaged in sex work, right, as a provider or a client, this affects you. These laws are, I think, an existential threat to liberty, which is why it's so appropriate for us to be presenting here at this Libertarian Conference. But I think it's really important. We've come a long way with marijuana legalization, and I think that we've seen a huge culture shift. Like me and my mom smoke together now, which is great. I love not being grounded for that anymore. Win across the board. But I think it's important for us to resist the temptation to try to regulate or legalize or erect new legal structures around something that is older than money.
Thank you. Yeah, very important to point out that there are some similarities and a lot of differences. And so I think we definitely want to leave some room for questions. And I don't want to forget to mention that we are at booth 307, if you haven't seen us yet, right next to one of our allies, SWAT Behind Bars, who's doing incredible work to help sex workers who have spent time incarcerated kind of build their lives back up after suffering the detrimental effects of being arrested and being put into the criminal justice system. So do you all want to give some potentially closing remarks, and then we can open it up to questions?
Yeah, I just want to say that, I feel like I speak for a lot of people here when I say that this is my favorite topic, and I think that this is a great opportunity to talk to a lot of experts, with lived experience, many people who have been doing this work for years. If you are somebody, I just want to take this opportunity, if you are somebody in the audience right now that is an expert on this topic that would like to engage folks on talking about why we shouldn't criminalize sex work, please raise your hand and let folks know that they can come and find you and talk to you. I know that you're at the Feminist for Liberty booth. I'm wandering around. We've got a lot of different organizations here. So please take this opportunity to, if you don't feel comfortable coming up to the mic, totally understand that. Please come find us. We love talking about this.
I'll just say one more thing kind of towards the marijuana and this differences and similarities. It feels like, we really are, it seems to me at least, that at a place in the past few years where there are more and more not only sex worker rights organizations out there doing this work, like some of the amazing ones that Ariella just mentioned, and two of them are here today, so that's just really cool to see. Either more and more organizations or organizations that are more and more visible, there also seems to be more and more politicians. It's still a very small group, but in state houses around the country, we are seeing bills to decriminalize sex work. So, even in the, even since 2014, this seems like there's more of that. I think that we probably would have been here like 10 or 20 years earlier. Like, we probably would have been here along with the big push for marijuana legalization if there hadn't been this push to conflate sex trafficking and sex work, which was an intentional push. You know, back when some people here like heard of the 80s porn wars, and where a lot of sort of radical feminists who were just sort of, you know, opposed to all sorts of sexuality related things, and Christian fundamentalists were, you know, they were fighting against pornography in general. And then they were like, okay, we got to fight against prostitution. And surveys showed that most Americans were like, you know, maybe I don't want it like people standing on the street corner or whatever, but what adults are doing in the privacy of their homes doesn't matter. Most adults were for legalization or decrim. And they're like, how do we change that? Oh, we define it as de facto, like not involving consent. We define it as de facto, this horrible thing. We make it sound like these are all women being, you know, shipped in shipping containers in from other countries, or these are all children being trafficked. And so that's been a very deliberative effort for the past 25 years that has been going on. And I think that that has really derailed the movement for sex worker rights and prostitution decriminalization in this country in a really unfortunate way. But that we are finally starting to see through that. I mean, it's been, like I said, like 25 years now of that happening. And there was definitely a buildup and buildup. Even though it's still really going on, I do think we're on a build down where more and more people are becoming aware of this fact that this is actually what's happening, and that, you know, all of these lies that are being told about sex trafficking in the name and in the name of like expanding all these arms of the federal government. So hopefully the combination of more people being aware of that, like hopefully all of you now, if you weren't already, and the combination of this amazing rising tide of sex worker rights groups and activists out there will be pushing us more towards a situation where we see, you know, positive change.
Fewer arrests.
Yes, and fewer arrests.
Yeah, I think that's the big goal, right, is that, you know, sex workers are a really important member of every society. And I think it's important for us to be at the table when making policy decisions around our work. And so we're all aiming for a future where we can listen to sex workers and stop the arrests.
I'll add you with one more, arm you with one more little piece of knowledge when you now go out into the world and tell everyone why sex work rights are important. People who are concerned about trafficking victims, as everyone should be, this actually makes them safer. I think I said that earlier, but to decriminalize sex work. So when we conflate the two, not only does it harm sex workers, it actually also harms survivors of trafficking in the commercial sex industry. We know that they are often arrested on average 7 times before they're no longer being exploited. And so again, we go back to this very strange system of trying to arrest our way out of a problem and calling people victims, but also placing them in the criminal justice system, which, you know, further complicates their lives in ways that, you know, they can never really come back from. So this does no good for anyone to conflate the two and to have a lot of the laws that we have, which, you know, we'd like to think maybe we're well-intentioned, but as, you know, Elizabeth shared, you know, there's a lot of history behind them all. So I would love to open up the floor to any questions. Oh, we have one brave.
Thank you.
So my question is, what do you say to people, particularly women, who say that women involved in sex trafficking have come from bad families, broken homes, drug, you know, abuse, alcohol, that kind of thing? Because that's one of the things that I hear a lot of women saying as an argument against women working in the sex trafficking industry, that it seems, in their opinion, the people involved in are that they're in the business because they don't have other good alternatives.
Well, I'll just answer that briefly, if that's okay with you all. So when people say that, what we want to do is like make people's lives better, right, and reduce suffering. So if that is somebody's concern, this should be a social issue where people then can move freely through our society without being encumbered by a criminal record and, you know, have access to the services that they think they need to move forward or not. And so a lot of this, when you hear things like that, a lot of this goes back to like a chicken and the egg thing, is we can blame a lot of these problems on issues like that, but what have we done to address the root issue. If we're upset about people, and when we talk about sex work, we talk about it on a spectrum from choice to circumstance to coercion, and even within that circumstance window, there is some choice involved. So for individuals who are really morally opposed to prostitution or for whatever reason, the criminalization of it actually makes it much harder for anyone who would like to exit the sex industry at some point, because now they have an arrest record, which bars you from a lot of opportunities and resources. So for me, and I think for all of us, all roads lead to decriminalization. There is no scenario in which it doesn't make sense. And to go back to your question for another moment, you know, it's a social issue. It's not a criminal justice issue. So
you know, it sounds like you want to add. I definitely do. I hear that a lot. And that was, you know, when that was one of the hardest sort of myths and narratives to get over when I came out as a sex worker to my family, you know, because I didn't want my dad thinking that he had failed me in some way, because he absolutely didn't. And I will say that there's more and more data coming out now. It's really hard to poll, you know, a criminalized and stigmatized class, but there actually isn't a higher incidence of childhood sexual abuse reflected in the sex industry than in any other industry. And speaking as a stand-up comic, whew, let me tell you, that is an industry that is just chock full of unprocessed childhood trauma. But I don't think that like criminalizing open mics is a good way to help people process that. And so I'll tell you that, you know, it's misinformation on both ends, right? Like there actually isn't, you know, reflected a higher incidence of, you know, of rape and abuse in people that choose to go into this industry. That is a lie that has been propagated for over 100 years. It was, you know, one of the justifications behind, again, the White Slave Law or the Mann Act when we initially criminalized this. And remember, you know, this is 1910, right? This is the idea that if you were caught kissing somebody, then you were ruined for marriage. And so, you know, I think it's really important to put these myths in their appropriate historic perspectives. And like, we don't buy into a lot of the ideas that inform that kind of thinking. And I don't think that anyone can call themselves a feminist and also believe that engaging in consensual sex diminishes you in some way. So yeah.
Something that I actually have not been able to understand is the rationale behind arresting someone who is a victim. Could you just explain how that works?
We're still trying to figure it out as well. But if you want to add more than that.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, we did that with drug addicts for a really long time. We have a really long history in this country of criminalizing behavior that we don't like. You know, when all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. But there are a lot of issues. You know, sex work is only one of them. That like this is not a problem that we can solve with more arrests. But you know, we live in a country you know, with the largest prison population. Like we, yeah. Again, it's like this is the solution we have. And if we don't like something, then we criminalize it. And nothing good has come of it. But that doesn't mean that we can seem to stop. It's like we're addicted to criminalization.
Yeah. I think that some of it, this is my cynical answer, is that some of it is based not on people actually thinking it helps when I'm talking about like politicians and various, you know, levels of the federal government and state law enforcement, but the fact that they've built, you know, that it allows them to expand their budgets and expand their power, and that they've built up this giant narrative that we have an epidemic of trafficking going on in the United States, and they need to justify that with numbers and arresting people consensual for, you know, consenting acts helps them build up those numbers. So I think that that is a big part of it. The less cynical answer is that there are obviously people who really want to help and think that this is the only way to do it, as Caitlin said, because this is what we do in this country, is try to arrest our way out of problems. And you hear a lot of people say, you know, if we're going to help them, we need to arrest them so we can get them away from their traffickers or get them away from the life or, you know, isolate them so that we can offer them services, which seems silly. Like, obviously, you can offer people services without putting them in a cage first. But I think a lot of this is based on myths about the way that trafficking happens. You know, like, again, everyone has this idea of people being held, you know, cameling over in shipping containers or snatched up off the street and then being, you know, chained to a radiator and literally not being able to go outside on their own or not being able to do anything on their own and being, you know, under the watchful gaze of a trafficker 24/7. And so if we're going to save them from these traffickers, we need to, you know, who are international criminals and have this vast network and everything, then we need to do these, you know, elaborate sting measures. When you see time and time again, either from looking at stories in the media or talking to sex workers and trafficking victims and everyone in between who comes in contact with the criminal justice system, and this is, you know, they're not, it's much more often that it's someone who has a family member or a boyfriend or a partner of some sort who, you know, they have mixed feelings about, who it starts off as maybe a consensual relationship and them agreeing to do this sort of work, and then it becomes more coercive and abusive over time. It's people who are immigrants, but they weren't, you know, brought here against their will and under totally deceptive circumstances. They knew that they were going to be doing some sort of sex work, but then their bosses are trying to, like, you know, not give them any labor rights at all, and they don't know how to get help for that because they're, you know, in this country and they don't have a lot of, you know, knowledge of how to get help for that. It's things like that. So it's not, you know, it's people who do need services and do need help, but they... it's more help, like, they need resources and things. They don't need someone to literally, you know, bust down the door and break them free, which is what I think a lot of people imagine.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I find myself saying over and over again that, like, Taken wasn't a documentary.
Yeah,
it's silly. And, like, you know, it's interesting because you're absolutely right that the conflation between human trafficking and adult consensual sex work is funding entire vice departments across this country, right? Because they can justify the tools that they're using with the arrests that they make, but only if they call them trafficking arrests. But, you know, trafficking in this country, in the sex industry in particular, looks a lot more like domestic violence than like international drug trafficking. And so, you know, we don't need helicopters and SWAT teams. We need better shelters, right? We need more places for people who are in exploitative, violent situations to go where they won't risk being arrested.
I think we knew another question was coming.
Great.
I think, yeah, First off, I'd like to applaud your courage for getting up here and doing this. And I do like the similarity with is it the next marijuana? Because they have been fighting a battle for, as you know, for forever, trying to decriminalize marijuana. They have made some steps. And I have four daughters. None of them, fortunately, have wanted to engage in this profession. They cannot understand why it is a criminal act. But the question directly is I'm a lawyer by trade, and it's the terminology, and it's what they do. It's like with the war on drugs, and a lot of people say it's the war on drugs. Well, no, it's the war on drug trafficking. And the same thing that you're facing, it's that word, mm-hmm. trafficking. And my question is, has anybody tried to get something that defines that word so that it is more, especially with what you're fighting, so that it is more directly related to what the general public views as trafficking, which is little kids and children that are being, like you described. Have you looked into somehow defining what that word is so that trafficking is not defined as somebody buying or selling of legal consensual age?
Well, briefly, you know, trafficking involves force, fraud, or coercion. So maybe we can come up with one word that combines the three of those somehow. thank you. As we were touching on before, there's, you know, consensual, right? We have a great word on the other side of things, consensual. It's not just one word. I'm gonna let Caitlin and or Elizabeth maybe finish that answer.
I think, okay.
So first of all, you know, the trafficking does have a legal definition. The problem that we're facing is a sort of a popular conflation, right? So, which is why, as Elizabeth pointed out, you know, the media reports trafficking stings and the charges are all about, you know, engaging, promoting, or procuring prostitution. So, you know, we do have good definitions, but we have, there's a lot of, federal laws and local laws around preventing, advocating for sex work, right? So you can't receive federal money as an anti-trafficking organization if you are promoting prostitution, right? So there's a couple of gag orders in place that have really prevented this from happening. But I would go so far as to say, like, the problem that we're having is not... it's not a definition issue. It's more of a sort of popular conflation, which, as Elizabeth talked about, it's definitely by design. Yeah, and congratulations for raising four daughters that don't want to talk to you about their sex life. I think, you know, my dad is we're working on it.
About 8 or 9 years ago, I started attending these investment conferences for cannabis. I know this is not about cannabis, but I have experience with that and not with your industry. So I started talking to the people that were the policy advocates for Normal and Marijuana Policy Project and all that. And it became pretty obvious several years ago that I said, hey, y'all, you're going to win this. You're going to work yourself out of a job pretty quick. So I would always ask them, what are you going to do after you work yourself out of a job? Because I think y'all may be facing that someday. What would you do next?
Everyone's plan.
I'd be happy to be put out of work.
Yeah, I'd love to go back to comedy.
Yeah. Well, and maybe I'll take it up someday. But, you know, we do think this is winnable in the not too distant future. And in the meantime, you know, I take for granted, too, that I don't think we mentioned just now, we are making incremental wins around the country that until we can achieve full decriminalization are offering sex workers and survivors of human trafficking some relief along the way. And as Elizabeth mentioned before, we are seeing a lot of momentum around the country. It's become part of the public discourse a lot more than it ever was before. We're seeing in New York City and in Ann Arbor, Michigan and Baltimore, and this is not decriminalization, it's not codified, and we wouldn't want it codified the way it's written now, but DAs around the country are starting to deprioritize prosecuting prostitution offenses and are also offering record relief for individuals who have prostitution on their record. So they are still, nobody has come out to say they are not prioritizing the buying of sex, just the selling, which is what we referred to before as the entrapment and demand model. So we do not want what is happening now codified into law. But in the meantime, it offers a little bit of relief to people who are really suffering when they have contact with the criminal justice system. So we're seeing a lot of good movement. Any other?
I'll just add that, you know, what you mentioned actually is a big problem with the last person who asked the question said, with trying to change the definition, because there are so many organizations that have developed around fighting trafficking, and there's such like a giant, you know, industrial complex and federal money complex around all of this that, like, I think that's one of the big impediments too, is like from the opposite arm, like you just see so many groups that have become so well funded and they have all this staff and they have these huge like budgets out there, and so they need to keep defining the problem upward and you know, keep showing that there is more and more of a trafficking problem. They can by definition never win this fight against trafficking, or else, you know, they're going to be out of a job and out of an organization. So that's why you see like all these new and inflated ways to fight this, and, you know, new trainings we need to do, and all these new avenues, just because of that exact problem you mentioned on the other end, on the end that is fighting to keep things criminalized.
I'd just like to say I really appreciate the way that y'all focus on the decriminalize, because instead of legalized like the cannabis world's done it, because that's been there's tax discrimination, there's banking restrictions, every state's got its different regulatory framework, and the taxation of it's kept the black market alive when it was. So it's just been a cluster in many states. So decriminalization is the right route. I hope y'all continue to use that word.
Thank you so much for saying that. And as to your earlier question, I want to say that like decriminalization is really only a first step. You know, we've been fighting the criminalization of prostitution in this country for more than 100 years, but we've been fighting whore phobia for 6,000 years, you know? And so I think that in addition to stopping the arrests, destigmatizing the oldest profession, right? Allowing sex workers to be, you know, active members of our community is definitely going to be a multi-generational fight.
Get to a next panel. Hi. So I'm going to dip out right now.
But we can hang around for a little bit.
Of course, so.
This is more of a question for everyone. Incarcerating someone is very expensive. Mm. And I mean, don't you want more money in your pocket? Like, seriously?
Well, the prison industrial complex is a huge issue. So,
yeah,
but
sure.
I mean, we could go on for days about that. So yes, more money.
Yeah.
Less prison.
Yeah.
I can try. I've done a lot of talking about this already today. So we're pursuing a state-by-state strategy. I guess we took for granted that prostitution is regulated at the state level and at the municipal level, at the county level. There are no federal laws around prostitution. There are federal laws around trafficking and around any sort of explicit content related to children. We also have revenge. See, you got me off on a tangent. We also have revenge porn laws in 46 states in Washington, D.C. So really, there are laws in place to do a lot of the things that people who don't want sex work decriminalized want to see happen. So DSW, as I said, we're pursuing a state-by-state strategy. Our ultimate goal, and as Caitlin rightly mentioned, that is the ultimate goal for right now, but there will still always be a lot more work to do, Randy, I lost my train of thought. So we work directly with legislators around the country in addition to doing a lot of public education and outreach. And as we feel like we can introduce decriminalization bills, we have, and we've seen some introduced recently around the country. But in the meantime, DSW has been heavily involved in some incremental measures in New York, in Vermont, in Rhode Island, including what, you know, those of you who are familiar with the drug world might know as the Good Sam Bill, which offers immunity to places where it's passed, most recently in Vermont, offers immunity to consensual adult sex workers and survivors of human trafficking who have either been victimized or witnessed a crime while either being trafficked or engaging in consensual adult sex work. And so in the meantime, this again offers some relief to individuals who could not come forward before for fear of arrest. I know Caitlin likes to talk about serial killers.
Yeah, I do.
And it's a real issue that we have to be concerned about. Sex workers are often targeted because they cannot report crimes as they occur and cannot seek the assistance that they need. Do you wanna?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, yeah. So yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right, you know, that like DSW does a really great job of talking to legislators and working on incremental bills that will have that have an immediate impact on sex workers. You know, vacature is a big deal. One of the things that happens when you're arrested for prostitution is that you have a record, and that makes it harder for you to get a job or get an apartment or leave your past behind if that's something that you're interested in. And so, you know, helping to vacate records is really, really important harm reduction work. You know, we could go a lot further if we stopped the arrests in the beginning, but helping to try to undo some of that damage is really important. And, you know, I live in New York, and I remember for years the Long Island serial killer was terrorizing sex workers all over the state. And, you know, there's an organization in New York called the Sex Work Project at Urban Justice Center that was fielding phone calls from sex workers that had information about an active serial killer. But after negotiations, the New York Police Department would not offer immunity to adult consensual sex workers who then could not come forward with that information. And we've made that choice over and over and over again. We allow serial killers to literally go on murdering people rather than, not arrest people for the horrible crime of making someone feel good for money.
So, I was just going to thank everyone for coming, and I wanted to remember to mention that there's a lot of momentum, not only in the places I mentioned before, but in Oregon, in Southern California. So wherever you are, if you want to continue to stay involved and kind of continue the conversation and learn how to arm yourself with the facts and the knowledge around this, please visit our sex work movement area right around booth 307 and make sure you you sign up and get the facts. And never trust, I'll leave you with this last bit of information, never trust any numbers you read from any of the big major human trafficking agencies around the world. So yeah, I think we'll end there.
Thanks for coming.